Members, thank you so much for your attendance, and members of the audience, thank you for joining us. Today is the Education Appropriations Subcommittee meeting, Monday, March 10th, 2014. Will the Administrative Assistant please call the roll?
Mr. Chair.
Present.
Vice Chair Rayburn.
Here.
Ranking Member Taylor.
Here.
Representatives Atkins.
Here.
Ahern.
Here.
Castor Dental.
Here.
Ms. Hagan.
Here.
Jones. Lee.
Here.
O'Toole.
Here.
Perry. Excuse. Reed.
Here.
Stone. Quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Deborah. Members, today we have the lovely Trina Kramer batting DH for Alice Heflin. And today we're going to take care of a couple housekeeping items first, and then we have our presentation from DMS. Members, in your packets, as I was just discussing with our ranking member during lunch, you will find a spreadsheet showing the base budget. All that means is that that is the budget that was passed out last year and is this fiscal year's functioning budget. That could act basically as your template as we move forward next week in rolling out the first iteration of our budget and look at it just to kind of refresh your memories on what we passed last year and to allow that to kind of be the starting point of any conversations you want to have with myself or staff prior to next week and in the weeks moving forward. So that's why that's in your packet right now. We expect to receive allocations later this week and anticipate that we'll have a budget at our next meeting, which is next Tuesday afternoon. Right, Trina? Yep. Okay. So any ideas or concerns or thoughts that you may have regarding this or next budget cycle, please let me know. Now we are moving right... I'm sorry. I know that in the original agenda, there was some item concerning the workshop conforming bill language. I intend to provide you a list of issues that will be included in our conforming bill. However, it's still a work in progress, and we will have some of that information in our next meeting as well. If we have no questions or concerns regarding that, we'll move straight on to our presentation, to our Florida broadband map presentation. We have the Department of Management Services. This is not one of our usual agencies, but as you know, this year we provided funding for district bandwidth support and technology transformation grants to rural districts, which the Department of Education provided us an update at our January 15th meeting. DMS works closely with our school districts, assisting them with obtaining the bandwidth and internet access and submitting E-rate reimbursement requests. To assist us in understanding some of the challenges districts may have in obtaining adequate bandwidth, DMS will show you information that is available to each and every one of us. Staff will then provide us with additional information after that presentation. Members, as a reminder, any presenters or speakers are asked to complete an appearance form and provide it to staff. Our presentation of the Florida broadband map is provided by Mr. Ed Peters, who I just had the pleasure of meeting, Director of Telecommunications at the Department of Management Services. And at your will, and when you're ready, Ed, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Honored members, today I want to introduce you to a diverse but very valuable tool called the Florida broadband map. But before I go into the map, I'd like to give you just a little bit of background on the Department of Management Services and how this fits in. The Florida Department of Management Services provides telecommunications for all state of Florida agencies for voice, telephones, for data transport, for radio communications, for law enforcement and first responders. But not just state agencies can procure those services. Also, they're available to cities, to counties, to universities, and certainly to our schools out there in Florida. One of the telecommunications services that is key to this presentation this morning is the Florida Information Resource Network, or FIRN, as we call it. Currently, there are 49 school districts that buy their internet access and their data transport off of FIRN. Going a little bit further, the Division of Telecommunications within the Department of Management Services is also responsible for the Florida Broadband Initiative. Now, the focus of this initiative was to determine where in Florida there is insufficient broadband for our citizens, for our schools, for our governments. And once determined, that would be rolled up to the federal level, and they would target stimulus funding to help build out broadband infrastructure by providing the stimulus to service providers in Florida, providing excellent access to our schools, hopefully down the road, as well as others. This information was collected from the service providers, put into the map, according to what they tell us that they provide throughout Florida. And based upon that, we can look and see the state of our schools in regard to broadband. I'd like to take a little step aside for a moment and talk about E-rate briefly. On your telephone bill, on my telephone bill, on the telephone bill of every Florida citizen, there is a charge called the Universal Service Fee, Universal Service Fund Fee, USF. And the money is collected by the service provider. It is sent to USAC, the Universal Service Administration Company at the federal level, who pools this money together and then provides it back out to schools on a need basis to those that qualify. And it can pay for up to 90% of the telecommunications costs for those schools. Going back to the broadband map, it does have, as I said, a diverse amount of functionality in it. Virtually anything that's on the U.S. Census is available on this map. This map is available on the Internet to you today as policymakers, to our citizens, to our Florida businesses, virtually anybody with an Internet connection. It includes population densities, income levels, educational demographics. But what we want to focus on today is broadband coverage, or the lack thereof, throughout the state of Florida, how our schools map into that broadband coverage, and we also want to touch on E-rate and the flow of E-rate funding that helps us to meet the demand for bandwidth by the schools. There are a lot of tools embedded within the map. You can access it again from any place where you can get internet access through map.broadbandfla.com. It's there today with the full functionality that we're going to demonstrate to you. We're going to show you a couple of the tools, but if you want to learn more in depth, feel free to call on myself or my team, and we'll be glad to lead you through the map. But we're going to show how we can zoom in to a specific area to see the health of that area with regards to broadband capability, what we have as far as schools in that area, and how much broadband they can get to. We're also going to show how you can divide the map up into boundaries by counties or by house districts, and we're going to do that as well today. So we want to start off looking at E-rate funding. Now, this is a heat map of Florida. The darker blue or cooler colors represent E-rate levels that are very low. The orange and red indicate E-rate funding that's flowing from the federal government that's actually very high. So if we look at the tip of South Florida, we do see Miami-Dade. And if we look, they had total telecommunications cost of over $66 million. But yet, federal funding from the USF fees collected from our citizens that we brought back into this state, back into our educational facilities, paid for $43 million of that, somewhere around two-thirds. So it's amazing the amount of money that we can bring back in. Now let's go to broadband availability in Florida. And when we talk about broadband, keep in mind, we're talking about a couple of things. Number one, the 1314 GAA 102A, which specifies and provides ways for schools to attain up to 100 megabit per second per 1,000 students. We're also talking about fiber optics, because fiber is the only medium available to us that not only will meet the demands of the schools today, but also in the years to come as these standards begin to increase and digital curriculums, online assessments begin to really take hold. Looking at Florida, you can see we have quite a challenge because the darker areas, the light brown, are areas that do not have fiber. The lighter areas are areas that are rich in fiber. So let's overlay the districts on top of that. And now we can look at the house districts, and you can begin to drill down into your own district and see how the district is faring. Zooming in on Miami-Dade, District 114. And remember, the dark The darker areas represent areas without fiber. The lighter areas are areas with fiber. Looking at a specific school, and we can highlight it, every one of those dots is a school. Ludlam Elementary School has just under 400 students. The bandwidth that's called for under the GAA is 40 megabits per second. Their bandwidth they actually have is 100 megabits per second. Their compliance then is 100% plus, but they are in an area where fiber is available. On the other hand, Pinecrest Elementary has 1,000 students. Their standard of bandwidth is 100 megabits per second. Their available bandwidth is actually 30 megabits per second, making the school 27% compliant. So it has a ways to go, but it is in an area without fiber. Likewise, George W. Carver Elementary, 456 students, bandwidth standard called for, 46 megabits per second. Actual bandwidth, only 12 megabits per second. Compliance, 25%. So still a ways to go. And again, an area without fiber. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Sorry to interrupt you real quick, but just you said that the darker brown areas are the areas with fiber?
Without fiber.
Without fiber.
Yes, sir. Moving to Hillsborough County, District 57. Taking a look at a single school, Cypress Creek Elementary, we see 1,119 students. The standard called for 112 megabits per second. What they actually have is only 20 megabits per second. School compliance level, only 16%. Again, in an area without fiber. Reddick Elementary, 762 students. Bandwidth called for, 76 megabits per second. Actual, 20 megabits per second. 22% compliance. No fiber available. Right on the edge, but there's no fiber right into that school. Moving on now to Nassau County and District 11. Callahan Intermediate School. Students, 585. Standard, 59 megabits per second. What they have, 40 megabits per second. They're up to 64% compliance. Callahan Elementary School. And note here the lack of fiber. It is a virtual fiber desert out there. The students are 567. Standard called for, 57 megabits per second. What they actually have is 40 megabits per second. Even in the desert, their compliance is at 64%, but there will be challenges moving ahead. Now to Duval County, District 14, First Coast High School. Number of students, 2,234. Standard bandwidth called for, 223 megabits per second. The actual, they have 100 megabits per second, less than half. They're at 41% compliance, and again, in an area without fiber. Oceanway School, 1,213 students. Standard calls for 121 megabits per second. What they actually have is 100 megabits per second. School compliance, 78%. Not too bad. They're on an area just verging in fiber. Molino Park Elementary. We'll find 369 students. Standard called for, 37 megabits per second. Their actual today is 12 megabits per second, only 28% compliant. No fiber in that area as well. Moving on to St. Lucie County, District 83. Westgate, K through 8. It's actually in an area where fiber is available, right on the edge. Number of students, 1,208. Bandwidth standard calls for 121 megabits per second. They actually have 500 megabits per second. They're at 100-plus compliance, again, in an area with fiber. And finally, jumping over to Orange County, District 44. And all of this is real-time on the map. It's just as you would see it happening if you were drilling through the map yourself. Bridgewater Middle School, 1,139 students. Standard called for, 114 megabits per second. Their actual speed, 100 megabits per second. They're at 82% compliance. Sunset Park Elementary, 1,219 students, 122 megabits per second. Their actual, 100 megabits per second. They're at 75% compliance. But all of these are in areas just verging on having fiber available. So moving forward for Florida, the map can be continued and customized in various ways. We can watch the schools as they begin to adopt the standards. We can watch as they begin to meet the standard, to grow their bandwidth. We can see exactly what the compliance level is. We could even drill down to the components and technologies that make up that access for that school so that you as policymakers can make informed decisions. But as always, there is one little caveat. Title 47, U.S. Code 222, prohibits any service provider from giving us information related to their customers. To get this information, we need to be their customers. And one way to do that is to use the Florida Information Resource Network provided by the Department of Management Services. And that way, we can accurately capture, track, and report what the schools are doing. In closing, I'd like to leave you with this thought. Peter Drucker, a management consultant, said very wisely, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. Today I submit to you the Florida Broadband Map and the FERN network provided by the Department of Management Services does give you both the ability to manage and track and measure schools' compliance as we move Florida towards a digital curriculum in the future. Thank you, and I'll be glad to take any questions.
Thank you very much, Ed. Members, since there's no real kind of bill structure to this thing, let's shoot with some initial questions of the presenter first. And I know we have a couple audience presenting sheets, but I guess we can... Let's just go ahead and start with that, and then we'll go with questions for both the presenters and the audience members. Is this the only sheet we have? We have Mr. Anthony Kim from Education Elements, San Carlos, California. Yep. Welcome, Mr. Kim. Nice to see you again.
Thank you, Chairman. And thank you for allowing me to speak today. To add to the broadband presentation today, you know, I wanted to reinforce the importance of why we need broadband and why it's important for student outcomes. And I think that we're all here to use broadband and technology to produce better student outcomes. And there have been cases where student outcomes haven't resulted from bring technology into schools, and there have been many cases where it has. And so I'd like to provide you with a little bit of overview on what we're seeing across the country around where technology has produced student outcomes and what we think is important in the space to continue to produce those kinds of results. So just a little bit of my personal background. I've been working in the education technology space for over 10 years now. And I've partnered with over 30% of the most innovative schools across the country implementing blended and personalized learning. I've visited over 100 schools across the country over the last 3 years, seeing how technology has been implemented, and have worked with some of the well-known schools that have implemented technology and blended learning, like Rocket Ship Education, KIPP LA, and some of the districts across the country. So, one of the problems we've seen over the past few decades Granted, we have limited bandwidth, but we've also been buying billions of dollars worth of devices. And oftentimes, you see these devices collecting dust. And this is not only a waste of money, but it's a disservice to the students and the staff at many of the districts. $2 billion was spent last year alone on online content and digital content. And yet, we have seen varying degrees of quality implementations. So from our experience, we have seen many districts and schools across the country implementing technology with a high degree of fidelity. And where we've seen that, we've seen tremendous outcomes. We've seen students grow a year and a half in half a year. We've seen kindergarteners work on second grade content, second graders work on fourth grade content. These are all things that we would like to have in all of our schools. It also creates equity amongst the districts. It creates opportunities for the underprivileged. It creates opportunities for students that are accelerating to move faster. And many states across the country are starting to pass bills that allow for districts to compete in innovating their current school system. Some of the districts that we've seen, or some of the states that we've seen across the country, like in Ohio, last year they passed a $250 million innovation grant for districts to compete for, where they can implement technology, completely change their school model, and hopefully produce better outcomes, but also develop their teacher workforce. In Utah this year, there is a $200 million bill that is, I don't know the exact terms, but up. And it is also a competitive grant for districts to start implementing technology, provide essential training for teachers. And by essential training, I mean not to learn how to turn on the computer or to reboot it, but to be able to utilize this technology as part of their curriculum and instructional strategy. And this is critical in implementing the bandwidth, the devices, the digital content that we're planning to do in Florida today. So what I encourage the committee here to consider is that beyond just thinking about devices and bandwidth and making appropriations for content and online courses, there needs to be a systematic approach for new school design, training teachers and the staff on building capacity around how to use these technologies in the classroom properly, so that ultimately we could get better outcomes, create more equity, and allow students to accelerate at a pace and get feedback that is more immediate through the use of technology, but also allow teachers to really focus on the things that they should be focusing on, which is deeper learning skills, exploratory learning, and making learning relevant. I think that across the country, the industry or the parents and students are fairly distrustful of the education system as a whole, based on some of the research that we've seen coming. But there's a high demand and eagerness to become better learners. And technology allows students to become better learners if deployed the right way. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kim. Members, anybody else? Question, Mr. Kim? Representative Ahern?
Thank you, Mr. Kim. And I was just wondering, because you mentioned this $2 billion that was spent, was that on devices, and who spent it?
So $2 billion was spent on digital content, from online courses to CD-based courses that are online for students to go at their own pace. And
is that a national number?
National number. Okay. It's a national number, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Kim. I appreciate
you.
It. Okay. Coming right back. Yeah, I'm going right back. Okay. All right, Mr. Peters, if you don't mind coming back up. And members, questions for Mr. Peters and or his staff? Representative Lee, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Peters. When you have on the air the percentage of the level, the compliance level, what if they're not at 100%? I noticed that these schools, they were anywhere from 16, 28, 78, 100%. So do they have to be in that particular area 100% before? Explain that compliance level.
You're recognized.
Okay.
Yes. The compliance level represents the state standard, which was set forth fiscal year 13-14 GAA 102A, which called for 100 megabits per 1,000 students. Now, that was for online assessments associated with PARC and some of the things that you're looking at here. So the compliance ratio was developed by learning what the school has today and comparing it against that benchmark of what they may need to have next year.
Let me expand on that a little bit also. In the policy that we set forth as far as what the aspirational goal was for the 100 to every 1,000, it was a combination of factors reaching towards the school year 17-18, which included what we assume will be the workload for curriculum delivery, content delivery, assessment, kind of the entire hub of what will be the expectation of technology at every single school site, hopefully by 17-18. So that's how it was laid forth in the policy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your presentation. So the information that you have that's available in this map has been provided to each of the school districts so that they understand what their numbers are, and does it help them with their mapping of how they move forward?
Mr. Chair.
You recognize, sir?
Yes, the school districts do have access to the information that was collected here. In fact, a lot of the information that was collected was drawn from the districts themselves and reporting to us where they are and where they're going. So they're very aware of what we have, and they are very aware of where they need to be in the future.
Follow-up,
you recognize?
And when you talk about the fiber that exists or doesn't exist within the various areas, you're not just talking about for the schools, you're talking about for the communities, correct?
You recognized?
That is correct. It's the entire area.
Representative Castro-Dental?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for your presentation. I have more of a practical question I'm trying to understand. The effect for students and teachers in the classroom, if you're at a school that's at 50% compliance, how is that different? What does that look like in difference between someone, a class that's at 100% compliance? Is it the speed of what they can access that's different? Is it the number of computers or students who have access? How does it actually look different at the school?
It's a good question. You recognize, sir.
Thank you. When you're looking at a school and the broadband capacity that we're mapping out for it, we're really looking forward towards the digital learning curriculum and the online assessment, meaning digital materials that are online and available and the assessments that are ongoing and available. So it's a future that we're projecting too. It may not, where they are today in that ratio, may not impact them today because they have sufficient online access for their students today. But when we implement these standards, when we implement the digital curriculum, when we implement online assessments, then there's going to be a tremendous amount of data flowing through those connections, and in order not to starve them and squeeze out what we have today, we have to broaden them.
Okay, follow up.
You recognize?
So with the examples that you gave, there are some that are in the teens or 20s or of compliance. Does that mean that those schools are not equipped yet for the online testing for next year, possibly?
You recognize?
That is correct. So they are not at a point yet that matches the state standard that was set by the legislature.
All right, thank
yes.
you.
Okay. Any follow-up questions? Representative Stone, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Peters, thank you for that information. Very powerful. And you said that we would be able to get into that same level of detail on information. And I would love to be able to do that. However, I've been trying to follow it here on my device. Is there a different application for mobile than what you were using? Because I can't find that on my mobile device.
Mr. You're recognized, Chair. Sir.
No, there's not a different application. You should be able to get to it. My mapping expert, Julie, can you speak to that, Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir. Hi, Julie.
Hi.
You're recognized.
We are working on getting it available to mobile devices. Right now we have a shortfall for iOS devices, but we are working on that, and we will, within the next couple months, have that available.
Okay. Mr. Chair. You recognize, sir.
I kind of felt that might be the case.
Go upstairs and get your laptop. I'm sure it'll work.
As I was pulling down some of your language goes from English to another language on some of your pages, so it's quite confusing. But
that's just for me to understand, Charlie, not for anybody else.
If you would be so kind to send me that information when you get the mobile up and running, I'd love to have that to utilize.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Julie. Representative Stone, any other? No? Representative Ahern, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When it comes to this E-rate, you showed the map that showed how many different parts of the state were taking advantage of what would be the payment for these technological services. What can we do, or what can they do, to participate more in this? How do we take advantage of that more? It seemed like we're not doing enough there.
You're recognized.
The Department of Management Services has recently been tapped by USAC. I mentioned the agency at the federal level that pulls all the funding together to provide for E-rate coordination for the state of Florida. So we do have a couple of positions that are funded through the broadband grant that are state-appointed E-rate coordinators that are assisting all of the schools, not just schools using DMS services, but virtually every school in Florida to try to maximize their E-rate funding. Getting the E-rate funding is something akin to doing income taxes for a large corporation. Everything has to be filled out perfectly. It's a ton of paperwork, and if you miss something, it's not going back and correcting it. They just deny the funding. So we're very pleased that we can show progress, especially coming into 13-14 with E-rate funding that we're able to capture helping the schools with that. Now, having said that, I just want to state that the broadband funding is coming to an end later this year, so the state will need to entertain some ideas of how to continue that E-rate expertise at a centralized level to keep the schools moving ahead and obtaining what is a significant amount of funding.
You recognize?
Just a follow-up question: Are we preparing to do that as a state, or?
You're right. Essentially, can we quickly replicate whatever the capture rate that Miami-Dade and other counties that seem to have captured a lot of it, so that other districts can take advantage of the same thing?
Absolutely. The Department of Management Services does have a legislative budget request in to fund E-rate positions to continue this support, because we recognize the benefit to the entire state and the amount of dollars coming back in. As you saw, it was millions and millions for one county. The whole state is just a huge amount. So that's an area that we would be looking for support.
Members, any other questions? I have a few, Mr. Peters. And thank you so much, by the way. That map was very cool. I hadn't seen it until right now, and I commend you and your staff for putting that together. I think it's incredibly informative. A couple of quick questions. Slide 2, you said that 49 school districts are buying off the FERN contract, which, in my understanding, has another year left and perhaps maybe. What's the commonality between the 26 school districts or 16 school districts that are not taking advantage of this currently?
I don't know that there is a commonality. There was a point many, many years ago, I forget exactly when, somewhere between 2005 and 2008, that funding was diverted away from maintaining a contiguous statewide network for the schools to actually helping them build out infrastructure, because we saw the rapid growth of computers within the school without really thoughts of getting them out to the internet and online assessments and digital learning. And at that point, a lot of the schools began investing in their own resources and their own access techniques and turned away from a statewide consolidated initiative. But over the past couple of years, we've seen schools beginning to come back, because DMS is able to aggregate the requirements for all state agencies, for all schools, cities, counties, and provide a lower cost. And we have seen tremendous reductions in the cost that we can provide, and schools are beginning to take advantage of that now.
Okay, and as a follow-up to that then, if they're coming online now and knowing that that we're going to predicate so much of our accounting for kind of the status that they're at, because if you look at slide 7, when we talk about access to the data on connection type, whether it's fiber, DSL, or cable, and the infrastructure and components of the connection. You yourself mentioned that the only way for us to get there is if we all sign on to FERN, and then that's how we're going to be able to get that information as consumers. So how do we guarantee, either incentivize, recommend, or what have you, to make sure that all 67 are functioning under FERN so that you can do your job as detailed on page 7?
I think that may be covered by House Appropriations staff coming up after this to a degree.
Oh.
So I think I would like to defer to them on that matter.
Very well. Okay. And then my last question was regarding the status of the fiber and kind of the runs that we did and what their current compliance rates were. And I don't know if this the three schools that you mentioned in my house district had the demographic outlier characteristics that I'm about to mention right now compared to the other ones that you mentioned, but there is what would seem contrary to common sense. There is no connection. Matter of fact, there's a disconnect between kind of the socioeconomic status of a community and or where that school is located and their connectivity level, meaning Pinecrest, which is the school that you mentioned at 27% of my district, is in a much more affluent neighborhood than is the other school that you mentioned that was at 100+%. Is there a disconnect or is there no connection between kind of affluence and not affluence, which I think most members in the audience and in Florida would think that there's probably some sort of a disconnect or a connection between poverty areas and having no fiber and affluent areas and having fiber, and your examples don't say that. And then if so, are there other reasons why those areas are not connected, and Pinecrest, which is one of the areas I know of, may have some either conflicts with local ordinances and or existing contracts with telecom providers or others that are either preventing fiber from coming in or stalling those negotiations? So can you talk a little further about why it is that fiber is in certain areas and others, and it's obviously not, whether or not it's affluent or not? So can you talk a little further into that?
I'd certainly be glad to, and thank you for that question. It's very thoughtful, and just about everything you said is absolutely accurate. There may be instances, and this is on a case-by-case basis, where there may be issues getting fiber built out because of right-of-way or whatever, aesthetics or who knows. But for the most part, it's been my experience in telecommunications, and I've been in the field for about 30 years, what drives the service providers is profit, being able to earn a living and keep the business going. So that profit comes primarily from population-dense areas. So where you have a higher density of people residing, then there's a need for more bandwidth going in because more people are trying to access the Internet. That may not always correspond to affluence and poverty. It's just density overall and where things have settled. Urban versus regional is a big factor. And while some regional areas may be very affluent because of the lack of population density, then there may not be fiber there. So it is driven overall by demand, and where we're heading today is towards a demand for the schools to be able to meet the state standards.
Okay. So we can state on the record, and again, this was news to me seeing your map, that it is a common misconception that some of your more urban, high-density, high-poverty areas are the ones more likely to have non-connectivity, where, in fact, the inverse is the truth?
I would hesitate to reach that judgment because a lot of times we see those areas occur within an urbanized region, say the center of a city, and it may have been built out previously, if you understand what I'm saying.
So, I do.
Okay.
I think that's it. Thank you so much.
You are very welcome.
Station members, any other questions that may have come up as a result of my disconnected questions? Okay, thank you. And moving right on. We're about to go into members now in your packet. The last item is education technology infrastructure cost diagram, which Ms. Denise Potvin, our House IT budget chief, will explain to us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The education technology information cost diagram, which is on the screen now, was developed in collaboration with Mr. Peter's staff, and it is intended to describe a potential approach for addressing the broadband issue within our school districts. As this committee is well aware of, current law requires the Department of Education to publish technology requirements that include specifications for hardware, software, networking, security, ratio of students per device, and bandwidth capacity. These requirements should help districts in developing their technology infrastructure that will allow them to implement online assessments, deploy local instructional improvement systems, and provide access to electronic and digital instructional material. The department published these requirements by the statutorily required date of October 1, 2013. Additionally, in the current year budget, there is proviso that directs the department to also establish required wireless specifications necessary to implement and use instructional technology and administer online assessments. These specifications were published by the August 1, 2013 deadline. The department modeled its published requirements on those requirements that were recommended by the State Educational Technology Directors Association, or CETA. For bandwidth capacity, CETA recommends that to reach the goal of sufficient broadband access for enhanced K-12 teaching and learning and improved school operations, districts should meet a minimum bandwidth target of 1 gigabyte per 1,000 students between now and the start of the 2017-18 school year. Since 1 gigabyte is equal to 1,000 megabytes, the standard can probably more easily be stated in 1 megabyte per student. So this diagram depicts a model, a potential model for deploying this standard. And as the Florida broadband map showed, we do have a number of our school districts that may have some challenges in getting to 1 megabyte of bandwidth per student. And as previously mentioned, because districts have to administer online assessments, convert to electronic and digital instructional materials, deploy local instructional improvement systems, compliance with this broadband standard becomes even more important. That's not to suggest that the need for devices or other technology-related equipment is not important, because it is. But it's also important to remember that the ability for a school district to increase the use of technology in the classroom teaching and learning, which includes using devices, all of that is contingent upon having sufficient bandwidth. So what this diagram depicts is using the Florida Information Resource Network, or FIRN, that DMS mentioned in its presentation, and deploy through FIRN the bandwidth to each school district that will allow each district to comply with the standard of 1 megabit of bandwidth per student. And that would be starting no later than the start of the 2017-18 school year. The bandwidth would then come into a central aggregated site within the district, frequently referred to as the District Area Network, or DAN. And once at the DAN, which you can see on the diagram in the dotted red circles, that they would then allocate out the appropriate amount of bandwidth to each school based upon that school's proportionate share of the district's total FTE. On the left-hand side of the diagram, you'll see four labels or boxes. Each one of these represents potential funding issues that a district may be faced with in order to comply with the bandwidth standard of 1 meg per student. The first one is labeled bandwidth, and this is the monthly recurring amount to buy 1 megabit of bandwidth per student. And as Mr. Peters indicated in his presentation, we've got about 49 of our school districts that currently buy some or all of their bandwidth off of the FERN contract. The bandwidth is eligible for E-rate funding, and the average E-rate discount for the state as a whole is about 70%. FERN also complies with all of the federal and state content filtering, security, and privacy requirements. Under the bandwidth label is one entitled Technology Construction Cost for the District Area Networks. Going back to the broadband map, you'll remember that Mr. Peters identified that there is areas of the state where broadband, most notably fiber, is not currently available. In order to bring that meg of bandwidth per student into the district, each district will have to have fiber or some type of conduit to transport the data and connect to the internet installed. So this technology construction cost within the DAN represents that portion of those costs. Likewise, in order to take the enhanced bandwidth amount from the district's central aggregation point, or the DAN, and allocate it out to the school district, or allocate it out to each of the individual schools, at the school level, there may also need to be fiber laid or some type of transport mechanism installed in order for them to receive that bandwidth. And that's what is termed the technology construction cost at the box level. And the last one, at the very bottom of the screen, in order for a school to connect to the bandwidth coming in from their DAN, there might be some network infrastructure equipment, such as routers or switching devices, that are needed. And the network infrastructure cost at the school represents this potential funding need. So in totality, what the diagram helps to understand from a bandwidth perspective is what our districts may need in order to be fully compliant with the bandwidth standard by the academic year 2017-18. Such compliance will certainly help all school districts in their implementation of the current law requiring online assessments, the deployment of local instructional improvement systems, and providing access to digital and electronic instructional materials. That's the diagram, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Denise. Any questions on the diagram? What happened? Well, why is that so funny, Deborah? Representative Jones, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're talking about 17-18. What would it take in order for us to expedite this? When I'm thinking about broadband and when I think about making sure that these schools are connected and the ability for us to move forward as we continue to say we want more of this, we're insisting on more of this and requiring more of it from everyone, what will it take for us to expedite the ability for the districts to be able to get there?
Yeah, let me take that one. I think part of the reason, I think that's part and parcel, a large part of our work this session. We laid out the policy last year. A huge part of that, as Ed quoted towards the end, is we needed to know what we have. And I think that we've gotten very far into knowing kind of where the school, to the individual schoolhouse, kind of where they're at. Is it a district-wide problem? Is it an individual connectivity problem? Between now and obviously by the time we're done with the budget, we're going to try to map out from a monetary standpoint, how do we fund that? How do we fund to make sure that each one of these components that were just laid out on this diagram are met, and can we get there towards the goal of 17-18 to have that that 1 meg per student goal that we have? And I think that's the discussion we're going to have. We're going to have the discussion, see whether or not what we intend to appropriate for each one of those silos is in fact good enough. I'm sure we'll get testimony from both DOE and districts to see whether or not they concur and or, you know, have some differences in opinion with what was just laid out as to per the schoolhouse, whether or not that's the right prescription or not. That's going to be the ongoing conversation, but certainly it is mine and this committee's role to ensure that what we set forth, now that we have the information, that will in fact appropriate adequate funding to get there. Any other questions? Members? No? Denise, thank you. That was a great presentation. And members, that concludes our meeting for this week. And I look forward to seeing all of you next Tuesday, March 18th at 3 p.m. when we will start talking about the actual budget. So thank you so much for your participation today. And Representative O'Toole moves, we rise.